I mean, you know, if the Wild have been the better team, I think 7 out of the 9 periods that they've played the St. Louis Blues so far. That is a big concern if I'm a Blues observer, follower, player, and coach. If they can do some of the things that they think they can do, it might not be as easy as you think, but You know me, I don't like to get too giddy about things and jump up and down. And I still think this series has a potential for 6 or 7 games. And the worst-case scenario is going back to St. Louis 2-2. And the Minnesota Wild certainly don't want that. I think the Wild win this one, but I don't think they win it going away like they did the other night.
Well, I think the fact that you got a team in the Blues, and we've talked about this a little earlier, their coach knows it. Most of the core players know it. They have struggled on the road in the playoffs, 9 losses in a row and 17 of 19. That is a tough thing to break. And the way they played the other night, the way the Wild did, and also the way the Blues wound up playing, I don't know what they, if they can muster anything more. I don't think the Wild, you never have to worry about them being overconfident, not this year.
No, the only thing we've learned with this team is when their backs aren't against the wall, they may get a little bit complacent. But this is a Stanley Cup playoffs, and these guys are professionals. I don't think you ever have to worry about that with what's on the line and what all this means. But, you know, part of that road loss and the woes for the St. Louis Blues is they're not getting the matchups that they want with the second change like they get at home. And I don't think this team, the St. Louis team, really is showing us that they're capable of changing the way they need to play on the fly here. And they definitely need to change. I'm telling you right now, I'd go Jacques Lemaire 1-2-2 to slow this team down. All we've heard Ken Hitchcock and company talk about is how the neutral zone has been absolutely devastating in those moments they haven't played well, which in my opinion is almost the entire series. I would throw the book at the door and just say, you know what? We're not going to come at you hard. We've got to change the way we play, because the way we play, if I'm a St. Louis Blue, isn't working.
Well, Hitchcock, obviously, he's been a good coach, but he does have to take some accountability for this when you've lost 17-19. He's been the coach through all that, right?
Most of it, definitely.
Certainly the last 9.
Yeah, this current run has been pretty much him and this current regime. And, you know, I know Doug Armstrong has a great background with the Dallas Stars, and he has Bob Gainey, by the way, my daughter's godfather, as his special advisor. That's a little name drop.
Oh,
right,
wow.
There. Yep. And, you know, I mean, they do have a Hall of Fame staff working there. Ken Hitchcock has a Stanley Cup pedigree. I have no doubts that he's one of the better coaches in the NHL, but you're right. If you're losing 9 in a row on the road, that isn't by chance in the postseason. Something's definitely got to be addressed there. And I don't see this Blues team playing the way they need to beat Minnesota in the long run at this stage of the game. I think it's become really apparent not only to their media, to their fans, but almost to the club as well.
Okay, now you got to back up and tell us how the man who was nicknamed Le Capitaine and had been... You know, how did he become the godfather to your daughter?
Well, I actually became very good friends with his family. You know, I guess I'd have to say now my ex-wife and I were engaged at the time. They went to the same church we did, and Kathy, his wife, had the really debilitating brain tumor where her short-term memory was gone, and we became she was really their nanny, and then I sort of helped out as well. And next thing you know, we're in Dallas with them. And, you know, when Kathy was really ill, we had told her that our firstborn daughter we'd name Catherine after her, which we did.
Okay.
And, you know, Bob would be the godfather just sort of for that legacy. The irony is Kathy Gainey had real black hair and blue eyes, and so does my daughter Callie, who we call. We don't want to confuse that, but it's a pretty cool story. So Bob Gainey's great family, Steve and his son, was like, you know, for me, it was like a crash course of being a father for him, watching him work through the youth ranks up into the NHL, which was his dream. And he got there, and it was really tough with the dad, you know, Mr. Captain himself. It was really tough to follow in those footsteps, and that young kid did a heck of a job to get there.
Yeah, and he coached with the Wild, the Stars, and then the Montreal, where he made his mark on hockey as a player.
Yeah, brilliant hockey mind. Bob Gainey is, you know, Mike Madonna will be the first one to say that he questioned everything Bob was throwing at him in the Minnesota North Star days. and then into the early Dallas days. And, you know, I remember hearing Mike Modano say things like, the game's passed him by, he's old school, he doesn't get it. And you know, as well as I know, Bob, no, the game didn't pass him by. Either you're going to conform or you're not. And Mike Modano became the best two-way player in the NHL, and, you know, Selke Award type with high points. And really, they win a Stanley Cup in 1999 because of him. When he wins the Cup, the first thing he says is, you know what, I have to credit Bob Gainey for sticking with me and not giving up on me. I was kind of a know-it-all young guy, and he's taught me how to be a man. So, incredible guy and a great hockey mind for sure.
Now, what is he, and I mean, I know we're talking about the Wild, but I'm curious because a lot of people certainly remember Bob Gainey from when he coached here. Is he a consultant with Dallas, or has he moved on from that? Because that's the last job that I know he had.
Well, when they brought in Jimmy Neal from the Detroit Red Wings, you know, he obviously is a standalone guy, and I think it was one of those things. He was a consultant in Dallas after he was the GM in Montreal, and you know, Doug Armstrong is the guy that he brought into the managing role with the North Stars, and you know, they worked together as a GM and an assistant GM. And I think Doug just reached out to him straight up and said, you know, would you be a consultant with us here in St. Louis? And I know he certainly said absolutely. And all they need to do is bring in Les Jackson to complete that puzzle. He's still with Dallas, and Les Jackson was with the North Stars, I think, from 1981. He's been in that organization.
Wow.
Since 1981. It's incredible.
Well, Pete, you know what? We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Pete Wagner and Al Newman, former Twin, been in baseball for most of his life. Pete and Al, along with Gene Larkin, do a Saturday morning show. They do, well, Pete does On the Ice, and then he goes right over to doing On Deck Radio with Al and Gene. But when we come back, we're going to talk with Pete and Al about the Twins and how things are going for them. We'll be right back with Pete and Al.
It's time to get fired up for some Wild playoff hockey. Join Radioactive Sports at Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub before the game. The superstar Mike Morris and Ben Olsen will be live at Tom Reed's from 4 to 7 in the afternoon for weekday home playoff games. Get to St. Paul early for live pregame Stanley Cup coverage on the show. Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub is right next to Xcel Energy Center on West 7th Street. The Radioactive Sports broadcasts are presented by Rogaszewski, Rogaszewski & Atkins. Cup coverage you can count on. Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
The Bob Sansevier Show. Only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Great stop by Maurer. Thompson covers the bag, and a good play by Joe Maurer for the first out.
Yeah, very nice play by Joe, just falling to his right and smothering that ball that Moustakas hit sharply.
That's Bert Blylevin and Dick Bremmer talking about your Twins. We're going to go to Al Newman, former Twin, and Pete Wagner. Al and Pete, they co-host together with Gene Larkin On Deck Radio on Saturday mornings on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. One thing I want to mention, though, before we do that, Greg Hardy of the Dallas Cowboys suspended without pay for the first 10 games of the 2015 season because of conduct. He really wasn't being a very good guy,
yeah,
according to the league. You know, he was suspended all last year. And the reason I think this could be significant, he'd come back for the Thanksgiving game, by the way, might loosen up a little more money for the Cowboys, might make Jerry Jones' son Steve Jones want to make a big splash before the draft with maybe a trade for a running back coming out of Minnesota. Now, I know both of you guys like football, too. Before we do baseball, let me ask you, Al and Pete, what do you think? You think AP will be here when the season starts? You think he'll be traded? Al, what do you think?
What's going on, guys? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I tell you what, I've been under the impression that he would be gone. He will not be here. And I think it all started with that conversation over the winter, you know, where they were just joking around about AP possibly playing Lane in Dallas. So yep. I think the Steve was planning way back then because AP knew what was up, what was coming down, and he was just getting his duck to the row, as they say.
Yeah, and Pete, you see that, too, him not being here?
Well, when you said the running back out of Minnesota, I was going to say, you mean David Kopp? actually, you know, it's interesting. Couldn't he pull a Brett Favre and retire, take a year off, and then go anywhere he wants? So, to me, I think he's as good as gone. Let's be honest. Yeah. I think it would be impressive if he stayed just from the organization putting their foot down and saying, you know what, you're a Viking, you're playing here, and we don't care if you're uncomfortable and your agent says, you're playing football here. I would respect that more.
Well, and I appreciate our hockey and baseball guy Pete Wagner and baseball guy Al Newman weighing in on the Vikings, because it's, you know what, people, you guys too, you're sports fans, you're not just limited to baseball, so I appreciate you weighing in. Now, weighing on the Twins, they had a nice homestand, but they've lost back-to-back games in Kansas City. It's just tough on the road, and happened to hit a tough opponent too. Is that all it is?
Guys, I mean, if I can go first here, I just don't want us to fall into the trap to think that this team is ready to compete to win a division. They're going up against Kansas City and Detroit. Those are the powerhouses of the league with a combined 22-6 record. And against the rest of the teams in the division, Cleveland and Chicago, the Twins, you know, I believe they won those series. So we've got to get our mindset back on accomplishing 500 first before we think we're in the same class with Detroit and Kansas City.
That's a good point. But now,
well, to echo that, if I could jump in real quick,
sure.
Bob. You know, like I've always said whenever I coach, you know, good things are going to happen, bad things are going to happen, and that's baseball, and how you manage that is what matters the most. And I agree with Al. I think we need to collectively, as a baseball society, quote-unquote, here in the Twin Cities, state of Minnesota, is say, hey, look, 81-81 is a great thing. It's a great goal to see this club get to. But along the way, there's going to be some stumbles. And there's going to be some great runs, too. And I still think that's where this team is ultimately headed, at least at this stage of the game. But you can't get two up and two down when bad things are happening and great things are happening.
Well, let me ask both of you this. Then we're talking to Al Newman and Pete Wagner. What do you like about what you've seen from the Twins? I mean, anyone in particular that you're starting to think, wow, this kid is coming on, or this guy is coming on? It doesn't just have to be one of the younger guys.
Well, you know, Pete and I spoke earlier, and I was saying to him, I'm happy with the way Gibson and Mays, I think it's Mays, is Trevor May, correct?
Gibson, May, and Malone.
Malone. I like how all three of those guys are throwing. I think they're competing out there. You know, we're making some mistakes behind them, which hasn't made it easy for them. But I've seen them, as they say in the business, they bowed their neck and they tried to get after it. So, on that side of things, I think those young guys are getting quality experiences, and Molly's letting them go through the wars a little bit in the sense that he's letting them pitch out of trouble. He's not getting that bullpen up right away to bail them out, because they've got to have on-the-job training if this team is ever going to rebound.
Well, that you're absolutely right about that. And now, Pete, you obviously, both of you had been following this team for a while. Do you think that we'll see? When do you think we're going to see some of these guys? Right now, Buxton's been struggling. Do you think we may not even see him this year, even as a call-up? And some of the young guys, are they pretty much going to be in Double A, or maybe move up to Triple A? Because that's what people are waiting for, to see some of the young guys come up.
Well, I think, you know, obviously they've been, you know, and I've been harping on this for a while. We didn't really know much about players like this as much, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now with the way social media and the internet reporting is, now we've got them all analyzed down to the nth degree. I think it's really important to make sure they're ready. And I trust the Twins system to understand when it's the right time for these guys to play. We have not seen Snell and Buxton put together a full season in a couple of years. I think Buxton ever. And so I think before we start talking about that, I think you need to get a little bit of a body of work, at least at the Double A level. Al, I mean, would you agree that you don't need to rush these guys?
And sometimes I definitely agree with you, Pete. And you know, having managed in the minor leagues throughout the system, knowing that Double A is the level where you've got to get it. You got to have quality at bats night after night, because you're facing the type of pitching you're going to face in the big leagues, especially with the velocity and kids learning how to throw the breaking ball. So these guys are going to go down there and when I say dominate a league, I mean have quality at bats on a consistent basis and grow to the level of the competition in that league. I think that's in the scouting world. I think that's what you're looking for with these two young men. If they didn't make the team out of spring training because of, you know, an awesome camp, then they're not coming up until they prove that they can have consistent at-bats.
Well, and Al, the other thing we talked about on our show, too, is, you know, take Danny Santana, for instance. It's really easy to come from that level, get pitching that's really controlled, and I don't know, you know, it's probably more in the strike zone or around it, but But then year two is even tougher. It's more difficult because it's hard to replicate that.
Oh, most definitely. You've got to. That's why if you notice, major league pitchers don't like to go on rehab assignments, because when they go to the minor league, especially the A-ball level and double A, those guys don't see pitches so consistently. So they get beat up when they go on these rehab assignments. And to your word, Santana and those guys came up. The ball's around the circle. Best of hitters, and they didn't have a book on them. This year, they have a little more of a understanding on how to get those guys out, and it's up to them to adjust along the way, because now they're being scouted the previous series before teams face them. So there's different levels of adjustments that have to be made that they've never faced before.
You know, in Santana's case, he's going to play himself out of a job, because you can't be the leadoff guy. And this, you know, it's not real deep. He's got over 50 plate appearances and not have a single walk. I mean, his batting average and on-base percentage are identical.
Well, you know, last night was the first time that I said, why didn't he take that 3-1 pitch? He grounded out weakly. I believe it was either the second or first base. And he could have taken another pitch from the 3-0. He's got to go 3-2 in that situation. Those are things that hopefully Bruno and talk to him about. You're not taking his aggressiveness away from him. It's just the situation dictated that you take two strikes in order to try to get the base.
Well, and Alan, Pete, but it is early. But to have a slash line of 200, 200, 220, my God, for a leadoff guy.
Not pretty.
That's a painful one to be looking at. Hey, I want to ask you this: you did manage in the minors. How different is Double A now than when you played? Because guys do make the leap from Double A. I'm trying to remember guys that might have made the leap when you played. Has it changed a great deal? Or is it, maybe I'm forgetting it? Has it always been like that?
It's always been like that. You know, even back when I played, Triple A were for guys that were somewhere between 28 and 32. Now, that age has dropped significantly to probably now AAA. Those guys are 27 to 30 years of age. They're the guys that you call up when you get a guy on the disabled list. They call them 4A players or 3A players, 4A players, because they're just not quite good enough to play every day in the big league, or their skill level doesn't allow them to sit on the bench and become dormant. So Double A is that level. And I'll tell you what, guys, it does separate. And you watch guys grow in the second half of the season. They learn how to hit the slider, the fork ball, the good changeup. And overall, they're being challenged every night with a quality starter in the lineup.
Yeah, because I mean, that is, you're right. That's what I was thinking. That's where you're finding the young guys that are ticketed to make it within a year or two to the majors.
Yep, and then they send them to the Arizona Fall League for a little more polishing. And then in big league camp, they're expected to be ready to go. And
well,
that
you gotta
was
be
the
healthy.
Level.
You gotta be healthy to get to that Arizona. You gotta be healthy to get to the Arizona Fall League, and none of these guys have been.
No, not at all.
Well, you know what? I'm sure you guys, you'll obviously be talking baseball on Saturday. Pete has On the Ice, and you go from 9 to 11, right? And expand. No, 8. Help me out here, Pete, because I know you expanded your hours with On the Ice.
You're correct. You got it. 9 to 11.
And then 11 to noon with On Deck Radio with Al Newman, who you're listening to, former Twin. Was in their organization for a number of years, and also Gene Larkin, former Twin. That's got to be a lot of fun for you. I know Hellboy loves listening to you, Al, you and Gene. Not that he doesn't like listening to you, Pete, but he loves the stories.
Thanks, guys.
My job is to get out of their way, put the ball on the tee, let them hit.
And you're doing a hell of a job of it, Pete, let me tell you.
Thank you.
All right, hey, thanks again to Pete Wagner, Al Newman. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, be joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously, and we're going to take Jim seriously in a couple of minutes.
Passionate sports talk.
Teddy Bridgewater.
He throws it pretty deep.
No one better throwing
ball.
An accurate football than Teddy Bridgewater.
No one more accurate.
Ooh, that's a bold
Aaron Rodgers?
I love that kid throwing a deep football.
On your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
We are back. And we're joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Jim, what do you think? You think the Blues will take it serious enough to make a game of it tonight?
Well, I expected them to play well in Game 2, and they did, and they barely hung on. I just sense, and you know, we're just going gut feelings. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. But my gut feeling is, and for once my gut feeling has been right pretty much throughout this series, my gut feeling is that the Wild has kind of established as the better team. The Blues are playing kind of an ugly form of desperation hockey where they're not really playing an intelligent game. They've kind of lost it. You know, I really feel like when you watch the Blues play, Tarasenko's as good as they are, and as many good players as they have, Tarasenko's the only guy you look at and go, okay, that guy, if he just gets loose enough, he could hurt you and he could win the game by himself. And the Wild has been so structured defensively. You know, other than Tarasenko making one brilliant play and Dubnyk making one mistake in game two, they've really kept Tarasenko from doing too much, you know, at home with the favorable changes. My gut feeling is the Wild wins, say 3-1, something like that.
Yeah, it's just, and again, with the way the Blues, they're 9 in a row in playoff road games, you know, 9 losses in a row, 17-19. There's something there they can't shake.
No, I agree. And you know, as much as I've praised Ken Hitchcock over the years, and I actually thought he should have been hired to be the Wild coach at one point, he was my favorite candidate out there, I'm just not impressed with the way this team plays under him. They haven't played well on the road in playoffs. They haven't played to their talent level, I don't believe. When you give Steve Ott as much time as Hitchcock does, you're pretty much taking away from chances to actually do something productive on the ice. You know, if the other team isn't going to retaliate and give you a cheap penalty, there's really no point to have Ott on the ice. So I think he's misguided in that way. I'm far less impressed by the Blues' entire operation than I thought I would be.
Well, and this Hitchcock is considered a Hall of Fame caliber coach.
Yeah.
Yet, I mean, as the coach, you're responsible for these, you know, this inability to win on the road in the playoffs, and he hasn't been able to come up with a formula.
Yeah, I mean, it would be one thing if they were losing road playoff games and they weren't very good, and they were just squeaking into the playoffs and then playing a superior team and then getting beat. You know, you're supposed to lose sometimes. I mean, everybody wants everybody to win all the time, but sometimes you're supposed to lose. The problem with the Blues is they've gone into the playoffs, you know, as favorites at times. They've gone into the playoffs at least equal some opponents, and they've underperformed. And and you watch them play up close, and you see why.
This is a strange trend to last as long as it has and to be continuing like this. Now, we talked about this earlier, Jim. What do you think of this 8:30 start? I think it's terrible, especially for kids that want to watch.
It's terrible. I really think that the NHL product has improved over the years. You know, there was a time when nobody could score, and there's a time when it was all goonery. You look at it now, it's fast-paced, entertaining hockey, especially where the Wild plays it. And, you know, it's back and forth. It's hard-hitting without two idiots dropping their gloves and beating themselves senseless. It's a good product, and it reminds me of kind of baseball, 20 years ago when, you know, as baseball writers, we always turn to each other and say, man, this game is so good, even Major League Baseball can't ruin it. You know, and that's what I feel about the NHL now. It's a great product, and they do everything they can to ruin it. 8:30 start in the Midwest. Okay, that means nobody on the East Coast would even consider watching the game. And people in the Midwest, I mean, anybody who has a job, anybody who has kids is going to have trouble staying up and watching the end of this game. And as we saw last night with Nashville and Chicago, it could go, you know, it might be over in 2.5 hours, but it might be 3.5 hours.
Yeah, what did that game go to? Almost 1 o'clock?
3 overtimes, yeah.
I actually might have gone past 1 o'clock.
Yeah, and it's great drama. I went back and watched some of it. Great drama that a lot of people just can't afford to watch.
No, and the biggest thing is, I mean, you have your kids, a lot of kids play hockey, and, you know, I'm not just talking about high school kids. I mean kids in grade school who would love to watch the Wild, and they're pushing it a little bit, even some of them with school the next day if it starts at 7, but at 8:30, it's just ridiculous, and they do need to look at that, and they haven't, though, because it always seems to be like that.
I know, and at some point, all these organizations need to push back on TV. These are all decisions made by TV networks. Hey, we'll get a better demographic, or we'll get, you know, if we spread the games around, we'll command more TV sets. Well, you're also turning off your core fan base. Now, the problem is that they'll anger people, but they won't turn anybody away. There's no Wild fan who's going to protest a stupid 8:30 start by not watching the game.
Yep.
Or not DVRing it, watching it the next day. So they get to do it without really suffering any consequences.
Yep. Now, Jim, I'm just going to switch gears briefly. And to people listening, the name won't mean a lot to them, but I saw that Lee Remmel passed away.
Yeah.
The longtime PR guy of the Packers. I mean, he was 90, but he did it, I believe, into his 80s. And has been around, you know, with the team and around the team. And it's just, Lee was an institution in Green Bay. And I you know, obviously, I just to send condolences and to his family. But, you know, you hate seeing something like that because Lee just, he seemed like he was always around and always would be around.
Yes. And it, a very classy guy, a very good writer, you know, and, you know, it was back in the days when sports writers could be a little, you know, well, back in those days, sports writers kind of were team partners sometimes. And Lee, you know, Lee covered the great Lombardi teams and became great friends with all the key figures and ended up moving into the Packer organization as a public relations director. And he was kind of the, you know, when I covered the NFL, I would go over and spend weeks in Green Bay to preview games or you know, either Vikings games or playoff games. And Lee was the guy you looked up when you wanted some lore or some perspective on what the old days were like. And he was a very gentle-hearted man. You know, very sad to see him go.
And not, you know, the other thing is, and they're not all like this. If you needed something, Lee made sure you got it too. He was always open to getting you what you needed.
Yes, he was a really wonderful guy, and it's sad news.
Now, Jim, tell us about Suhan Unfiltered. SuhanUnfiltered.com. You're doing something at the. Well, you're doing something today with Russo. I know that.
Yep, 4 o'clock.
The Liffey.
4 o'clock at the Liffey with Russo. First 50 people to show up and retweet something about the show get a free Guinness.
Nice.
And then Friday, Russo and I will try to do one live from St. Louis, probably from the press box before that game.
Oh, okay. So you're obviously traveling too.
Yes.
All right. Well, Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Check him out there. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk to John Tower, the coach of the St. Thomas basketball team. But today we're going to ask him to take more of a role as his other job there as a psychology professor at St. Thomas. And what we want to find out is, why does a team like the Blues keep losing road playoff games? There's something going on in their noggins about this. We want to know the psychological aspect of that, and we'll get it from John Tower when we return.
On Deck Radio with Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
Dan, glad.
What do you see that Molly's trying to do to implement his way of doing things?
Well, I think the first thing that jumped out is, you know, Molly's kind of the quiet messenger, whereas Gardy, I think, wore his emotions more on his sleeve. You know, I think Molitor's more the calm guy. I think the guys kind of respond to that a little bit differently.
Tune in On Deck Radio, Saturday mornings at 11. Wall-to-wall baseball talk on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Still no Frankie Valli. You get sort of that era, though. You're just a stubborn little cuss, aren't you?
Oh, Tiger, dumbass.
Yes, you are. You are exactly what that guy just said. We are joined now by John Tower, coach of the St. Thomas men's basketball team and a professor at St. Thomas. And John, that's sort of the hat I want you to wear today, because how do you explain when a good team, loses 9 playoff road games in a row and 17 and 19? That's not that's a trend.
Well, certainly statistically, you know, anytime you see a losing streak, the first thing you ask is that indicative of a team? And when we're talking about the Blues, it's not. So if a team is 50-50, for example, and I think tonight the odds on the Wild and the Blues are pretty close to 50-50, the odds of losing 9 straight would be 1 out of 512.
Really?
So it would be, it is pretty amazing, and you certainly have to stop and try and figure out, all right, so what exactly is going on? Because there's certainly, they're a good enough team, and this performance would indicate in lots of different ways that they can and should do better than this on the road.
Well, if the odds are 1 in 513, they've already hit those odds by having 9 in a row. The odds of losing 10 in a row must go into the 1 in 600 range, right?
Well, it would be. I mean, we're taking 2 to the 9th power, so if it's 1 and 2 to the 10th power, then it would be 1 out of 1,024.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, Now, obviously, the odds of them winning tonight should be on paper close to 50-50. And if you're their coach, that's what you're trying to do, is really clear their head of any of that, right? First, you have to figure out, do we do anything wrong on the road? Are we practicing differently? Are we traveling differently? Are the guys tired? But if all those things are in line, then, and you also have to ask, over how many years has this streak been? Are these the same players? Because
it's the core group, yeah.
Part of the problem you can run into then is, you know, you don't want things that happened in 2013 to be in these guys' heads tonight. And so sometimes a streak like this can actually get worse, not as much because of how the players are necessarily playing, but because they start thinking about, we've got to break the streak, we've got to break the streak. And, you know, the old paralysis by analysis, that if you think too much, that's certainly not, you know, you don't want hockey players thinking too much on the ice.
No, and then we're talking to John Tower, coach of St. Thomas basketball team and a psychology professor at St. Thomas, which is why I'm asking him these questions. Now, John, are you like a math professor too? Because you came up with those odds pretty good or pretty quick.
Well, I'm probably a numbers geek. All my aptitude tests as a kid told me I should be an actuarial scientist.
Really?
But I thought being a coach and a psychologist would be a lot more fun. So, yeah, I've always, little numbers. 2 to the 10th is 1,024. So I just know 2 to the 9th is 1 in 512. And, you know, it doesn't come in handy much other than when somebody like yourself asks me, what are the odds of 9 straight games?
John, I got to be honest with you. I know you. I've met you. I saw you. You know, you were in with us just a week or so ago. You really don't look like a nerd.
I think I appreciate that.
I mean,
I'm not going to ask you what I do look like, Bob, but
you look like a college basketball coach.
I probably have an eclectic set of interests, and I just numbers, you know, basketball analytics and quantitative analysis. It's something that in graduate school, that was, you know, when I asked my grad advisor why I got into the University of Wisconsin, she said two words. She said your quantitative score on the GRE. That was it. So that, you know, that's numbers have always come pretty easily to me. Writing and communicating, not so much. So you may want to rethink having me on the show.
No. You're communicating just fine. Let me ask you this then. What was the longest streak? Because you've had, St. Thomas, since you've been there, has had good teams. I mean, you won a national championship. Well, it was the year before you became head coach, right?
That's correct, 2011.
Yep. But you know, you've been with good teams and you've had good teams. What's the longest streak you endured, and how did you put your finger on it and end it? Or have there never been long losing streaks that you've been involved with at St. Thomas? I don't recall any, but I mean, was there ever a tough time?
We had a 16-game winning streak this year, which I think was right up there. We had a 30-game winning streak back in 2009. Losing streaks, you know, I know every time we lose a game in the conference, our SID, Gene McGivern, who knows all things stats in the universe, will start saying, you know, this could be the first time in 10 years the Tommies have lost back-to-back conference games. So I don't think we've lost back-to-back conference games in 10 years. We may have lost back-to-back games during that time.
Then you don't even have a losing streak. What are the odds of that? Never to have back-to-back conference losses in 10 years.
I'll tell you, every year there's 20 games that people want to beat us, and we know. I'll tell you, one of the main reasons why it hasn't happened, and it will, but one of the reasons it hasn't happened is I think our guys have really short memories. So win or lose, you put that game behind you, and, you know, hopefully we have a better than 50-50% chance of winning any given game. And if that's the case, well, then the odds of losing two or three in a row get pretty low. Now, if you're playing good teams on the road, we opened this year to save us in the conference. After winning four tough non-conference games, we lose in overtime, or lose at the buzzer, I should say. And then we go to St. John's for the next game on the road without one of our best players. So that was a case where we really looked at, like, all right, we could be digging a big hole for ourselves. Unfortunately, we turned it around, won the next 16 games, and ended up winning the conference. But streaks are tough. The winning streaks seem easy when you're in the middle of them. Somebody told me we had a 16-game winning streak this year, and I had no idea while we were in the middle of it.
Really?
I had no clue. And if we had a 2-game losing streak, be assured I would know about it. And part of the problem with losing streaks is you start thinking about probably too many things, and you really have to decide, you know, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so let's be careful with all the things that we change and overhaul.
Well, you know, and we're talking to John Tower from St. Thomas, a basketball coach there and psychology professor. This is why it's got to be a tough thing for the coach of the Blues, Ken Hitchcock, because 17 and 19 road playoff games they've lost, 9 in a row. What more is there for him to try to say to these guys to get it through their heads that they have to somehow find a way to fight through this? I don't think there's anything left to say.
Probably the less you say. I mean, if anything, it's let's make sure that they're playing free, playing fast. So when the puck is dropped, you just want them playing, you know, sounds cliche, but playing St. Louis Blues hockey, which is what they've done all year, and let the chips fall where they may. Because if they start thinking, man, the streak, and if the Wild get the first goal and the Blues start thinking of those thoughts, that can really be crippling for a team. So, no, I think all Hitchcock can really be doing is trying to boost his guys' confidence. There's the old adage, you know, when your team's down, that's when you build them up. When you're on a winning streak, that's when you try and bring them down to earth. And I'm sure that's part of what he's trying to do is just give them a boost of confidence that we can go into this hostile environment, and that we know is not going to be easy, just that, winning in Minnesota.
Well, John, thanks so much. John Tower, coach of the St. Thomas men's basketball team and a psychology professor at St. Thomas. As always, we appreciate it. We talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks,
right.
Bob.
We're going to turn things over to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They're at Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub in advance of the big game. I'm heading over to the old Chicago and Blaine. Be there from 5 to 7. We got a ton of things to do, too. Giveaways, prizes, have some fun. Also have, they have a special on beer. It's World Beer Night on Wednesdays there. I know you like beer.
All the beer in the world.
All the beer in the world. So we got plenty going on for you. Stick with us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Or disappear into the putter's ground.
Sports Talk, 105 The Ticket.